Tim, thanks very, very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Judy Pilak sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Also joining us in studio from your Chicago Tribune, Mary Schmink. Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm doing my Eric Zavorn impersonation today.
Yes, you are. Very convincing.
So, Bill, when I was driving in here, and I tuned into the tail end of your segment about news, Fox News,
yeah,
all that. But before that, I was listening to my favorite new podcast, which is News in Slow French.
What is that? I'm not familiar with this. What is that?
I've just discovered this. It's fantastic for anybody who wants to brush up on a language.
Yeah.
There is this News in Slow French, or the News in Slow Spanish, or the News in Italian, Slow Italian, and they really do the news. So I was listening to a French version of the news of the attacks in Belgium.
Yeah.
Barack Obama in Cuba, and it's actually real news.
It is.
It's
and did you? You're using the word slow, right? They do
right.
A slower.
Slow, that's what it's called. Bienvenue à News in Slow French. So you
and
know
the reason is so if you're not adept with the language, this you're able
so
to keep
if you
pace.
Speak okay, you know they have even slower. They have it for beginners, so it's super super slow.
Yeah.
So there was a time when I spoke decent French.
Oh.
But, you know, kind of losing it. So. It's really
that's amazing.
What
I didn't
great
know such
idea.
A thing existed.
Huh. It is really good. So for all your listeners who want to brush up on their French, Spanish, or Italian, podcast is free, and you can sign up for a little bit of money for a more elaborate.
Right. Is there a slow English version for those of us who speak English, but we just don't like the news
Why
thrown
don't we
just
at make us? This,
but is that like, are they just reading news from here in French, or is it like,
no,
are they actually?
It's like a separate newscast that it's designed for what they're doing.
Because yes. I'm just wondering what that newscast is like compared to what you'd hear in English.
It feels
in sloppy
like,
English over here in Chicago.
It feels like real news, and then they'll break sometimes to have a short conversation about it, and then the conversation. Even though it is slow,
yes.
He is very intelligent.
I understood that perfectly.
That was, yeah,
I've never
we're
taken
in.
French.
We could do that.
Wow.
You know, every
my
once...
French accent.
Yeah, very good.
My French.
Every once in a while, I'll watch on our satellite provider, there's a BBC channel, and I'll watch the news on BBC because even when it's bad news, somehow being delivered with a British accent makes it seem
makes,
a little more upright.
Well, it
I don't
makes
know why.
You feel more intelligent.
Yes, it does. Just a British accent. Now, speaking of accents, I always forget, because to me, you're part of the landscape of Chicago. I always forget that by birth, you're not a Chicagoan, but you're from Georgia originally.
I
and
am
sometimes,
a Southerner by birth.
Sometimes, not often, but a little bit of that Southern accent shows through. When do you get the Southern accent? What happens? Is it when you're in a hurry or upset? When do you speak more
well,
Southern-y?
Well, when I've had a little bit too much to drink or when I'm with my Southern cousins.
Does that happen
oh,
when you're
yeah.
with, yeah?
Yeah? Yeah, when I'm in the South in general, I just, you know, I have this philosophy about accents, that the accent that you learn as a child is your true accent.
Sure.
And that you can cover it up if you move to other places and you learn to speak like the people you're around.
Mm-hmm.
But you never really lose an accent. You simply repress it.
Oh, that makes sense.
So,
sure.
You know, if you go back to your native territory.
Yeah.
You fall
with
right
your
back
native
into it.
People. It's like, I always feel so relaxed when I'm speaking with my true accent.
You know what? You can do slow Southern news.
No, I think
we
that's redundant.
Learn it.
I'm almost sure that's redundant. So do you notice it yourself? If you go back to Georgia and you're with cousins or family from there, do you realize, this isn't the way I usually talk? I'm talking.
Yeah, I will. Yeah? I will hear it in myself.
You do.
But I don't feel I'm faking it. And yet I'll hear it and I'll think, wow, where did that part of me come from? where is it lurking most of the time?
Are you as fascinated as I am when somebody, I'll use Madonna as a good example. Madonna is from Michigan, but sometimes Madonna has a British accent. Johnny Depp also finds himself sometimes with a British accent, even though he's not from England. What's that thought process like where you go, I'm just going to speak with a British accent now?
Well, I think people, well, actors for one thing, have to learn so many accents. I mean, how do they even know what their natural accent is at a certain point? And Madonna, in her way, is an actress, right? She's a performer.
Sure, yeah.
I think people who work with their voice a lot.
But don't you write that up as being sort of affected? I went to Columbia College, and I've told this story before, but there was a teacher there who had a very thick British accent, but he was from here. He lived here. He was born here and he still lived here, but he had a British accent.
It does feel affected, but you know, I have a close relative, I will not name this person, but who for a while was speaking with a British accent, and I could never figure out what that was about. But I don't think she was intentionally trying to speak with a British accent.
Well, because I've got to think about it if I want to speak right. with a British. I couldn't even do it right now. I was just going to try to do it.
Maybe some people who read too much, or not too much, no such thing. But you know, I think she was reading a lot of British fiction during.
Oh,
that
maybe
period.
That's some part of it. But then, if you're a family member, if you're the parents or a brother or sister, don't you go, hey, yes. you don't have a British accent. What are you
yes.
doing? I would call them out on it.
I'd
feel
like,
a
knock
need.
It off.
Right.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Right.
But you know, I also one of my brothers lives in Russia and has lived there for 20 years and speaks many, many languages. And he speaks with a very curious accent now.
Does he?
It's and sometimes I want to tell him to stop it.
What's the curious accent?
But he's got all those languages
but he does,
in
exactly.
his head.
He
so
has all
I get
those languages.
That.
He hasn't lived in the United States in the past 30 years.
Oh, that's a while.
So when he comes over here, his English sounds just odd.
Really?
And
yeah.
I try to get him to, like, get out of that. It's almost as if he's not a native speaker and he learned English
yeah.
in a British school.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow. I wouldn't know what to make of that. I mean, 30 years is a long time, so you got to give him the benefit of the doubt, but that doesn't make sense.
And yet his English is perfect.
It is.
It's far
it is.
More correct than
how about
anything,
that?
Anything I
see. Mary Schmeek is here of the Chicago Tribune. We're going to talk about a column or two that you've written recently. Some very, very good work. It's Bill Leff and it's Judy Pilak in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. It's Bill Leff and Judy Pilak. Judy sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy will return tomorrow. Our guest is Mary Schmeek, fine Tribune columnist. If you wouldn't mind, Mary, a couple of columns you've written of late have really interested me. One of them in particular has to do with a college-age child. Well, do we even say child? A college-age adolescent.
Their children to their 40.
Let's make that the cutoff. 40's the cutoff.
Always so, children to their parents.
Right, always, forever and ever and ever. But what happens when your kid doesn't get into the college of their dreams? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I wrote a column for the Tribune Sunday paper about a woman who had written me back in 2003 when she was a high school senior at Zion Benton Township High School. And she wrote me to say that she hadn't gotten into Dartmouth. Mm-hmm. And she was just bereft. And she just said, do you have any advice for me? And so I wrote a column at the time just talking to her about rejection from college, rejection in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then many, many, many years later, I hear again from her. Wonderful woman named Ashley Bunnell. She was 18 when she first wrote me. She's 31 now.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to tell me what had happened to her since the time that as this despondent 18-year-old who didn't get into Dartmouth,
yeah.
what had happened to her since that time.
What happened? First what can
of
you
all,
tell us?
She went to Knox College
yeah.
in Galesburg.
Yeah.
She was first.
Wonderful writer's college.
First term. So unhappy to be there. She was eager to transfer out. But then she came back, and in the second term, something changed. And she just started to love it. And she had this fantastic experience. She just learned everything. She wrote me a wonderful note about how, in addition to all the great classes she took, you know, she said, at first I didn't drink enough, and then I drank too much. I learned to dance in front of other people.
Yeah.
I stayed up all night discussing philosophy and politics.
Yeah.
She just went on and on about the wonderful experience she
yeah,
had.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And then she went to grad school, and she was working on her thesis when, at the age of, I think, 26, she got a diagnosis of stage 3 cancer. And so, you know, her life went on from there.
Yeah.
Chemo, radiation,
yeah.
thinking she was clear of the cancer, learning that she wasn't, having a kidney taken out. And in the midst of it, she met a guy online. And while she was in chemo on Fridays, they would correspond via text or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in 2013, after they took her kidney out, they told her she was clear. I mean, you know, cured is not a word we use with cancer, but clear. She moved to Pittsburgh, married this guy. She's been there for 2.5 years, married, works with the homeless, and she was just so eloquent mm-hmm. about, you know, being 31 now as opposed to 18 and mm-hmm. everything that she had learned.
Right.
And that rejection was put into perspective for her.
Of course. Don't you think what this illustrates beautifully is, even though you have an ideal of what your life could possibly be, there's no way to know. Just because you stray from the normal road, sometimes it's going to be better, sometimes it's going to be worse, it's going to be different. But just because you have in your mind the college you're going to go to, or the city you're going to live in, or the man or the woman you're going to marry, or whatever, it doesn't always play out that way. That's not always a bad thing.
Well, and that, you know, and that's what I told her in the original column I wrote. You know, that rejection is really an alternate route sign.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It says, you're going down this path instead. Yeah. You may not want this detour, but you were going to take this detour. And the detour exposes you to wonderful things that it never occurred to you.
Of course.
Existed.
Yeah.
And the whole myth of the perfect college, right? This idea that there is only one college for you.
Right.
And without it, you will be miserable and doomed. It's just getting young people to believe that.
Yeah. How many times do they go to their dream college and they're still
right.
depressed and,
this is it? As I like to say, a couple of the most miserable people I know went to Harvard.
Yeah. I mean, you build it up so much and it's such a learning curve. You just can't, you can say it over and over. You can try to teach your kid and they just, at 18, they don't get it.
Right.
They don't get it. They have to
live
it.
But, you know, some of that, I think, is the nature of rejection itself.
It
is,
isn't it?
It's not just that you didn't get to go to the college you wanted to. It's that somebody
didn't
said no to you and didn't want you.
Right.
And that is devastating.
But that happens from the time you're a very small child up until your last moments on the planet.
Right.
That's always going to be a factor.
It's happened to me probably 3 times today.
Absolutely. Right?
Although I will say, when my son got that rejection letter, it was a rejection for me too.
Right.
It was so funny because I knew how much he wanted it and I really wanted it for him. And it just, but then you know what? Everything worked out for the best. Like you said, it reminds me of my favorite saying, 2 roads diverged into a wood.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Do you want to finish it?
Yeah, you should do the whole thing.
We wanted to do it. Do you know it? And I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all of the difference. I love that saying.
In the second half, Judy's going to do all of Tennyson's work. If you're a fan of Tennyson, Judy's got some surprises for you.
You know, I was a college admissions officer before I was a journalist.
You were.
Wow. I have so much more respect for you right now.
And, you know, and so I'm very aware of just, it's not a fickle process at all.
No, I imagine not.
But there is an element of, well, now, I mean, so much depends on grades and SAT scores, and it did back then, too.
But essays now.
Right, and essays. But there's just, first of all, it's like any competition. You don't know who you're up against. Sometimes you're just up against people who, on paper, are better than you are.
Right.
Let's just face it. On paper.
Except
numbers bigger. It's just the way it is.
Right. Except we're taught early on, we're taught to believe that we're not better than anybody, that we're all the same. But in reality, we are better than some people and not as good as other people.
Well, and there are also aspects of all of us that are impossible to measure.
Without a doubt.
That, you know, that don't have a number that you can apply. So,
right.
You know, a lot of colleges, and certainly the one where I worked, there was a discussion. There were applicants. You would sit around and talk about the people.
Yeah.
Encouraging.
Yeah, it is encouraging. But at the same time, the applicants are held hostage to the preferences of the people who are making.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have your coffee that morning?
Right.
Are you mad about something someone said?
Right.
Yeah.
Does that person remind you of somebody who did something bad to you?
Right.
Right. Thank you for being here today. It's always so much fun to see you and to talk to you. Mary Schmidt can be read in the Chicago Tribune, and I highly advise that you do so. You'll be thrilled that you did. Thanks, Mary, for being here.
Thank you.
We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Judy Pilek in for Wendy on WGN.